You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
The person we know as Paul was essentially a rogue missionary who appointed himself an apostle and, without authorization from the core leadership of the Jesus movement in Jerusalem, traipsed around the Mediterranean, planting his own version of Christianity. Today, the letters he wrote to these gatherings that he'd started make up a big chunk of the New Testament. One of these ecclesia was in Corinth, one of the most cosmopolitan, culturally diverse cities of his day. In a town absolutely chock-a-block with religious and spiritual options from all over the known world, Paul has his work cut out for him, convincing potential adherents that his particular take on God is worth their time. And this is where his argument takes a surprising turn. Despite having traveled thousands of miles, planted countless proto-churches, survived beatings, imprisonment, shipwrecks, riots, and enough rejection to make most of us look for another line of work, he doesn't lead with his accomplishments. He talks instead about some mysterious thorn in his flesh, which 2,000 years later, nobody has ever figured out. Was it bad eyesight? Epilepsy? Depression? Opposition from his critics? Migraines? Of late, some have even speculated he was struggling with his sexuality. But the honest answer is, nobody knows. And therein lies one of this passage's greatest strengths. If Paul had told us exactly what his thorn was, we'd miss the point that it doesn't matter. His thorn is the same as ours. Whatever keeps us awake at night, keeps us humble, or reminds us that we're not as self-sufficient as we'd like to believe. Whatever it was for Paul, he desperately wanted it gone. He prayed, he pleaded, he bargained. 3 different times, he says, he begged God to remove it. Instead, the answer he received was one of the strangest in all of Scripture. My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness. What? That's not the kind of answer anybody wants. Healing, yes. Closure, yes. Thorn extraction, please. But no. Instead, Paul discovers that the thing he most wanted removed had become the very place where the divine did its best work, using the struggle for his benefit.
Our words of wisdom are from 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 7 through 10.
Therefore, to keep me from being too elated, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from being too elated.
3 times I appealed to the Lord about this, that it would leave me. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness."
So I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me.
Therefore I am content with weakness, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities for the sake of Christ. For whenever I am weak, then am I strong.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
During town council just a few months ago, the Fountain Hills vice mayor voted against keeping the town's current garbage collection service because, yes, they have a DEI program. And worse, they, quote, have a 100% score with human rights compliance, which really doesn't meet the values of Fountain Hills, unquote. So, given the fact that garbage collection in Fountain Hills is already too woke, can you even imagine what the response would be if it were suggested that a separate collection of banana peels, coffee grounds, wilted lettuce, and eggshells would be beneficial to the town? I guess it won't surprise you that in woke cities like San Francisco, Seattle, and New York, that they do exactly that. Not because they've become sentimental about compost, but because they've discovered something remarkable. And it's not that someone has figured out how to make a quick buck on banana peels. In fact, at least for now, it's actually costing New York City more to compost than not. They're doing it because they've realized something pretty practical. If all you ever do with trash is bury it, eventually you run out of places to actually live. But if you're willing to participate in the slower, messier work of transformation, what was once treated as worthless waste headed for the landfill can actually be transformed into rich soil for parks, farms, gardens, and vineyards. I think Paul would have liked that analogy, because maybe the problem isn't our mess, isn't our thorn. Maybe the problem is what we do with it. I think what Paul may be arguing here is that it's exactly in the messiest and most painful parts of our lives where the Spirit meets us and quietly begins the work of making us whole. I don't know about you, but I think most of us spend an extraordinary amount of energy trying to convince ourselves and everybody else that we don't have any garbage. And we live in a culture that's become remarkably good at hiding our thorns. We curate our appearance and edit our lives the way we edit our photos, cropping out the failures, smoothing over the wrinkles, quietly burying everything that doesn't fit the story we'd like people to believe about us. The trouble is, what we hide doesn't go away just because we pretend it isn't there anymore. Legendary psychotherapist Carl Jung called these buried aspects of ourselves our shadow. And it's not just the bad things we've done, it's the parts of ourselves we've decided or been told are unacceptable. The anger we don't want to admit, the grief we've never allowed ourselves to feel, the insecurity we cover with arrogance, the fear we disguise as certainty, the need for control we obsess over and call it being responsible. The shadow is everything we shove into the basement because we'd rather not deal with it. The trouble is, basements have a way of filling up. Jung believed that whatever remains unconscious festers. It accumulates energy, and it eventually leaks out sideways in ways we never intended. Be it a sarcastic remark, an outburst of temper, or a depression that seems to come out of nowhere. Maybe it severs a relationship or sparks a midlife crisis. One thing for sure, the shadow has all the time in the world. It waits, collecting interest. And as Father Richard Rohr puts it, if we don't transform our pain, we will most assuredly transmit it. Jung warned that whatever we refuse to acknowledge in ourselves eventually gets projected onto someone else. If I deny my own capacity for cruelty, then I can become convinced cruelty only exists in my enemies. I got a chance to hear Corey Henry at the MIM a couple of weeks ago, and I'm reminded of where he sings, "Hate is fear that is not tamed," right? Untended wounds are passed on in families, communities, and even nations. And that's one of the things I'm convinced is going on in our country right now. Poet Robert Bly, best known for Iron John, suggested that one of America's deepest wounds is that we never truly grieved the Civil War. More than 700,000 people dead. Families shattered, cities burned, the nation traumatized. And then, almost overnight, we tried to just go back to business as usual. Bly imagined that had Abraham Lincoln lived, he might have gathered the nation, not for a victory celebration or a political rally, but for a great communal lament. He envisioned Lincoln leading North and South, not in an impatient, consequence-free reboot, but in a collective wailing, in grief, a national confession, weeping together over the horrific human cost of slavery, secession, and war. Whether history would actually have unfolded that way, none of us can know. But it's hard to ignore the truth that grief never expressed doesn't disappear. It goes underground. And so here we are, 161 years later, still fighting the Civil War. We argue over monuments and flags, over what should be remembered and what should be forgotten, because we never honestly faced our collective shadow. A deeply troubled tangle of angry Americans romanticized the lost cause in order to avoid accepting the reality that slavery is evil and the Confederacy was a traitorous attack on the highest hopes for America. And rest assured, a wound like that, untreated, doesn't heal. It festers. A compost pile that is never aired out does not become fertile soil. It rots from the inside out. The same is true of our own lives. Whatever we refuse to grieve or to process, we eventually visit upon others. In The Road Less Traveled, Scott Peck wrote, "The attempt to avoid legitimate suffering lies at the root of all emotional illness." And there it is. The very struggles we resist, fears, addiction, doubts, loneliness, old stories, or fill in the blank, the parts of ourselves we've disowned never go away. They become part of our shadow. But here's what Jesus knew, the mystics have taught, and what I think Paul is reminding us of in today's passage. That same shadow, that thorn, confronted and acknowledged, can become a catalyst for transformation in our lives. In fact, it may be one of Christianity's great contributions to human spirituality. Failure is often a blessing. The clearest and most powerful opportunities for change and growth often come through our darkest moments. As Paul wrote, "Therefore I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities for the sake of Christ. For whenever I am weak, then I am strong. Struggling with our most painful setbacks and deepest ugliness is often the very process by which we grow as human beings. I don't think it's a mistake that Jesus said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." In other words, blessed are those that do not run from their darkness and their failures. Some of you know that last week I was on pilgrimage to Kansas City, mostly to spend a few days with mentor and friend Tex Sample. But no sax player can go to Kansas City without paying homage to the one who single-handedly changed American music forever, Charlie Yardbird Parker. We not only visited the remarkably Buddha-like Bird Lives Memorial near 18th and Vine, we even managed to track down his grave in an obscure cemetery east of the city. And today's passage got me thinking about Bird in a different way. Charlie Parker knew something about thorns, be it the heroin, the economic exploitation, a racist music industry, or the brutal discrimination of the Jim Crow South. When Bird was a young sax player in Kansas City, he was hearing music that nobody else had heard yet. He kept reaching for melodies and rhythms that simply wouldn't come out of his horn. At a jam session that has since become legend, Bird was only about 16 years old, and while reaching for that which no one had actually played before, lost his place in the chord changes. Count Basie's legendary drummer, Joe Jones, removed one of his cymbals and slammed it onto the floor at Parker's feet. Very public way of saying, "You're done." Humiliated, Bird left the stage. Most people would have quit. But Bird later described that night as the turning point in his life. Why? Because he went home and practiced. Not for a few days, for months and months. His disgruntled neighbors attested to the fact that it wasn't unusual for him to practice 11 to 15 hours every day. So, even though everyone else heard failure, Bird heard possibility. He kept working with what wasn't working until after endless hours of effort, something cracked open. The music he'd been hearing in his imagination hatched and found its way into his fingers and out of his horn. The rest is jazz history. Bebop wasn't born because Charlie Parker avoided failure. It was born because he refused to waste it. Bird practiced. Paul prayed. Neither one received the answer they wanted overnight. But both discovered that transformation doesn't happen by escaping the struggle. It happens by allowing the struggle to become one's teacher. Standing at Charlie Parker's grave last week, it occurred to me that American music very nearly lost one of its greatest geniuses because of one humiliating night. Thankfully, Bird didn't accept failure as the last word. I've got to believe that Paul and Bird would have had an understanding. Paul never says the thorn became pleasant. He never suggests suffering is somehow good or that God wanted him to hurt. He prayed for it to be taken away. And in the end, what changed wasn't the thorn. It was Paul. He stopped asking, "How do I get rid of this?" and began asking, "What if this has something to teach me?" From our own personal struggles to families, to communities, to nations, transformation isn't automatic. It requires participation. If we don't intentionally cultivate healing, we're doomed to propagate our wounds. That's why the work of justice always begins with the work of honesty. Before we can change the world, we have to stop pretending there isn't anything in us that needs changing. Do you think the president is listening? Maybe that's what Paul finally discovered. His thorn never became a blessing. It became a catalyst. It shattered the illusion that he could be perfect. And while that mysterious thorn never became his identity, it did manage to reveal who he really was. In her book, When Things Fall Apart, Heart Advice for Difficult Times, Buddhist nun Pema Chodron puts it this way: "Nothing ever goes away until it has taught us what we need to know." And there it is. The question isn't whether we've accumulated some garbage over the years. Of course we have. The question is whether we keep trying to deny it or trust that the Spirit meets us in exactly the places we've stopped trying to bury it and quietly begins the work of making us whole. It seems funny, but cities like Seattle and San Francisco have spent decades teaching people to see their garbage differently. Banana peels, coffee grounds, eggshells, things they used to throw in the trash are now collected separately because somebody with more than a little dash of wisdom realized they weren't looking at waste at all. They were looking at a resource just waiting to be transformed. If we're honest, we've all got the same kind of resources, faced bruising setbacks, and struggled with seemingly impossible situations. The challenge is to remember that the Spirit never asks us to become someone we're not. It simply refuses to waste any part of who we are. Be well. Don't forget, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee. The link's in the description.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.